most people actually do prefer to having intermediaries that they
Yes.
can call when a problem happens. So you mentioned you're losing your pass key, right? And I
Yes.
was in, actually on stage yesterday in Dubai on a presentation where we discussed DEXs versus SEXs. And at
Yes.
the end of the day, mass adoption, if I talk to literally the grandparent or the father or the cousin or the aunt that I tried to tell them about crypto, it's a lot about trust and convenience and ease of use. And most people, it's just a matter of fact, they want somebody where they know there's a building, there's a phone number they can call or an
Hundred
email they can
percent.
write to and complain and nag if something doesn't work.
Yes. Hello, innovators, explorers, and risk takers. Welcome to another episode of the Web3 with Sam Kamani podcast. I'm your host, Sam Kamani, and on today's podcast, I'm interviewing Stefan Kimmel. He is the CEO of M2 Exchange. Now, M2 is one of the biggest exchanges in Middle East and North Africa. And today he's going to share with us how he got into that role, how he is growing, is the challenges he is facing, and his vision. He sees the market going, what his personal investment philosophy is. So if you are a crypto enthusiast or a Web3 or a blockchain enthusiast, then this episode is for you. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend, and nothing mentioned in this episode should be taken as investment advice. So with that out of the way, let's get into it. So Stefan, welcome to the show. I'm so looking forward to talking with you. Have been waiting to organize this since I went to your event in Abu Dhabi. You've had few events there in Abu Dhabi, and that was fantastic. It was full of people from family offices and other investors and VCs and stuff. So it was a fantastic event. For some of our audience who still don't know you yet, I would love to find out a bit about your background. How did you end up in working in crypto?
Yeah, look, Mike, first of all, thanks a lot for having me on the show. I was looking forward to it, Sam. So thanks a lot for having me today. To your question, look, my background is actually in TradFi. I'm a traditional TradFi kind of guy. I was working in consulting for many years, working with traditional finance institutions, later on as an IT service provider, always with the focus on how to use technology to provide better products and services to customers. And if you like draw the line there in terms of the evolution, of course, the biggest jump in technology and the best way of doing that has been
Yes.
crypto in recent years. So it's almost impossible to resist doing that. I've been watching it from the sidelines a little bit, got involved in CBDCs early on in my time in IBM, then later on more and more into the crypto space directly. And finally actually took the jump when I joined Kraken in the Middle East for a time. And finally had the opportunity which is where I'm now. I'm super excited to be in the space. Went through the rabbit holes, never came back out, and happy to be here.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, as far as I know about M2, it is an exchange. Are there any other services that M2 provides, or what's the point of differentiation for M2?
Absolutely. So we are, as you pointed out, we are an exchange. We're regulated here in the AGM and in the Bahamas as well. We're rolling out additional licenses in Europe as we speak in Spain. And
Yes.
one part of our positioning is actually that everything we do is fully regulated. We try to seek countries to serve where there's clear regulations and rules in place that we can follow and abide. So that's a key part of the value proposition. It's safe, it's transparent, and
Yes.
it's regulated and clean, so to speak. That's one element. So that's the trading side. So we offer spot futures and OTC on the trading side, but then equally important for us is the investment side. So we always
Yeah.
said we want to be a place where those who already hold assets can invest them on or in a high return on a secure platform. So high returns on a secure and safe
Yes.
platform is the sweet spot. So far, we've come out with our earn products. It's the most basic product we have. So right now, the two flagship ones, for instance, is an earn plan on BTC, where we pay a 10.5% yield on
Yes.
BTC. We do the same on ETH, and we have 11.5% on USDT at the moment. as we go forward, we plan to, especially for family offices, institutional investors, you mentioned, more advanced products, structured products, option-based strategies, principal protected products, mutual type, mutual fund type products. Those all to come in the next, let's say, 3 to 6 months.
Yep. Oh, that's fantastic. How do you, this is something that I have noticed, and that is to do with the image of crypto when it comes to institutional investors. How do you change that? How do you challenge that?
The image of crypto. Look, I think we actually in a very good position right now. Of course, the last 2 years following the bear run and everything that happened was not pretty. A lot of bad news, a lot of cleansing happened, and it was duly needed. There was just no behaviors in the space that were not helpful for anybody. Yeah. But I think what's really changing now, which we are absolutely embracing, is the advent of more and more regulation. It seemed painful at first, of course, coming from an unregulated world from a crypto point of view, but it's really helping with institutional investors. At the end of the day, institutions can only invest from their own compliance point of view and their risk point of view.
Absolutely.
Into regulated activities. If something is not regulated, they're not allowed to invest, even if they wanted to. Now that we have regulation, the ground is laid out for them to invest. And of course, the most spectacular examples, the most prominent examples, which we all know of, is now all of a sudden the traditional capital royalty, like Goldman, BlackRock, investing in ETFs, or offering ETFs. And we all see the tremendous success that has had so far. And I think that also, let aside the inflow of that and the price impact it has, I think much more important to me is to signal that sense to the global investment community. It's no longer something that's just used in dark gray markets and something evil and bad. No, it's actually a legitimate investment vehicle. And I think that's the real story behind it.
Yeah, but then again, the counter side is that it's any currency will be used in the dark and the gray markets. Does not matter which currency in the world it is. It is a medium of exchange and trade. So anything like that will be used for good and for bad. So it was only going to be a matter of time. And it has happened with the ETFs, we can see. And it does bring in a lot more liquidity. And it will have. And I saw this is going way, way back when the gold ETFs were allowed or regulated and they became a product that started to be offered. And then the gold price since then, like before that, for decades, the gold price was very stagnant. And as soon as that happened, the gold price had a very big jump. And same thing is going to happen. And the jump is over the years. And so this will continue to happen over the years. That means there will be continuous incoming liquidity in the market for many years and decades to come. That's how I see it. So that's a good thing. On the other side, talking about challenges, so what are some of the biggest challenges that M2 faces?
As we roll out globally, of course, what we face is two things. One is, of course, the regulation in many places is still evolving and unfolding. So it's a bit of a moving target. As I said, it's key. The foundation of everything we do is we want to follow the rules and be compliant. But in many countries, those rules are changing. So it's a bit of a moving target, especially in an international expansion. But we have a great team built tackling that. And of course, additional advisors that support us in this effort. So that's one aspect. I think the other challenge that the space faces, and we're no exception to that, is of course providing fiat on and off ramps.
Yeah.
I think that's become a bit harder in recent years. We've had some success building those, but that's continuing to be, you know, an uphill battle for the time being. I'm hoping that with the advent of more regulation, it becomes easier because the rules for banks are easier as well, looking at it from their side. But for now, that's a challenge.
Do you think CDBCs will change that?
No, I don't think so. And CBDCs obviously will be operated by the government. And therefore, in most cases, used by banks naturally. I'm not sure whether CBDCs, whatever technical standards, and obviously there's many variations of that.
Yes.
But I don't think that they necessarily pave the way for privately owned coins or tokens.
Yeah. privately or like public ledgers and stuff. But it's just that it does open up a way in terms of the how people view it. If the government has a digital currency which can be once again traded or exchanged into, just like right now, a lot of the people do change Bitcoin and Ethereum and other tokens and coins into stable coins, USDT and USDC, and vice versa. So then when there is one more alternative of a CBDC, then people would change it into CBDC and then move to the banks that have issued them and things like that. Do you think that happening in the future?
So see, one aspect of it is the technological element and what technology it's based on in terms of CBDCs. Yes. But I think that the bigger question really is the role of the government in CBDCs versus in non-CBDCs. Let's just use that term.
Yes.
There's still, on the one hand side, in the crypto world, there's a lot of people who want to get away from government, will never touch a CBDC because of the potential privacy implications, etc. They want to get away from that. On the other hand, you have a certain audience who always try to do something that's actually endorsed and run by the government because they do trust the government. So regardless of the underlying technology, I think there'll still be groups on both sides endorsing one or the other. And then the question at the end of the day, does having a CBDC lead to adoption of stable coins or to increased adoption of stable coins? It's really a question how easy it's interchangeable. So the same problem you have today, converting fiat into crypto, you might have the exact same problem with CBDCs, regardless of the technology. It's really a matter of, are the on-ramps there? Are the exchanges in facilitating both? Do they have the license to do both? Because they're typically separate licenses. Yes.
Yeah, very true. That's true. Like the on-ramp, off-ramp challenge will still exist even in that world. I just thought that it might ease it a bit. Apart from the ETFs, what are some other major market trends that you are seeing that will have a huge impact on this whole industry?
So I think by far the biggest is the advent of institutional investors. Because look, in recent years, the predominant investors were still retail users looking at this from a more speculative environment. Institutions tend to bring a lot more liquidity and funds into the market, but also a lot more stability. They tend to have more stable allocations. They don't go in and out as much as retail investors do. So I would think in terms of total market cap, in terms of market volatility, to see positive trends in the years to come. Other than that, of course, the hottest or one of the hottest topics is real world assets. I'm very excited about that. I've seen some great projects, especially in real estate space, but others as well. Of course, the big challenge there is to get reliable price feeds on those real world assets to make them easily tradable on exchanges.
Yeah, that's where oracles would come in. But then once again, you say the word reliable, which is the key word.
Exactly.
to get that. I completely agree. There is a lot of activity in the RWAs, but I am still yet to see the adoption for it. I'll believe it when I see adoption. Whereas for like stable coins, I see massive adoption for stable coins all around the world in some form or another, and as underlying tech that it makes as well. What about for you as a CEO? What's your biggest challenge as a leader of a company in this space?
Yeah, look, we are still in early days. So right now, a lot of our attention is everything around growth, really, starting from rolling out new products almost every week now. By the way, stablecoin is one of the things we will be launching in, I'd say, 2 or 3 months. We have our own stablecoin, US dollar base. But we're launching loans now, a payment card. Yes. So coping with the product release cycle is one challenge. The other one, as we spoke about, is the international growth and making sure we got all the licenses in place in the various jurisdictions we want to enter. And then, of course, user growth, right? We love to invite everybody to come and try us out, see what we like.
Absolutely.
So that's what keeps me up at night.
yes. User growth, product growth, and regulation. Yeah, I do think so that these are some massive challenges. What has been most successful for you when you have in terms of user growth? And when you say user growth, is it retail user growth or institutional user growth?
both. We tend to focus on both family offices, institutional investors, typically also on, let's say, we call it assertive investors. So people who try to not just trade in and out and get rich fast, but yes. People who have a longer term view, who are interested in probably more holding, also investment type products and yield products, which again is part of our differentiation. Yes. So we offer products for both, but certainly more long-term minded investors are more our sweet spot, I think, as we are positioned.
Yeah. No, that sounds fair. And it is a challenge, I think. Growth is a challenge for every leader of every company. When it comes to you, like personally, what's your investment philosophy? What's the advice that you give? Say it's a family member asking you for advice on investing. What do you say to them?
Yeah, look, funny enough, I have three kids and they obviously see me. They see what I do and when I check the charts and they ask me to invest for them a little bit. And I actually opened little wallets for them as well and got them some Bitcoin and Ethereum, because that's for somebody who doesn't know anything about crypto and just wants to get into the world, that's probably the easiest way to get in, the most reliable, I'd say, the least risky approach. So those, I got some Bitcoin and Ethereum. And since then, it was, I think, 30% lower. It was only this year, or maybe 40%. No, but look, I personally, and this is not investment advice, of course.
I'm going to add that as well.
Put all the big disclaimers.
Yes.
I'm, regardless whether it's traditional finance or just traditional equities or crypto, I believe in long-term buy and hold. I'm a buy and hold forever kind of a person, accumulating the assets and run with them. That's my philosophy. So I go for the bigger coins more than for the extravagant ones. But then sometimes I just can't resist. So always keep aside a little budget for fun things on the side. When the itch comes.
Exactly. How old are your kids?
I've got a 15-year-old daughter and 12-year-old twins, a boy and a girl.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, I've got three kids as well, but they're younger.
Lovely.
Yeah, 10, 7, and 3, and 10-year-old I'm also introducing. So before, because I learned the hard way, so before I teach him about digital wallets, I'm teaching him about password management. using things like 1Password or this LastPass or things like that. So just using good, what do you call it, security hygiene, that you don't write these things down, you keep them safe. If you lose this, there is no customer support. If you lose your digital wallet password, you can't, in many cases, recover it. And so, so I'm teaching him with the basics, because everyone I know in crypto who got in like pre-2016 has lost money at some stage.
100%.
Because they have either lost their passwords, they have lost where they put their USB key because they lost faith in the whole thing, and then they cannot find it. All sorts of things have happened. You're not really old in crypto unless you haven't lost money. So that's why I do believe that there is a model for centralized exchanges. And very few people even realize like who M2 is backed by. Because I've been and I've spent time in Middle East, I know the weight that are like ADGM and they that carries. For most people don't even know. For those who don't know, can you describe to them like who is backed by?
Yeah, look, we have two main groups of shareholders. One is Phoenix Group, and that's a publicly listed company in ADGM. They're one of the largest miners globally. That's also a strategic partnership we have with them, since some of the yield generation we have is by deploying the assets in mining and generating the yield from that. That's one element. The other half is Abu Dhabi-based family offices that support us very strongly, and we're very blessed to have that, especially in the context, of course, of the UAE and Abu Dhabi being a very crypto-friendly environment, the oldest regulation in the world, very strong regulation, reputable in other jurisdictions as well. So that's a key part of our background and our DNA.
That's fantastic. It is very different, the environment. The business environment in UAE, Abu Dhabi, is very different to US. I've been going to US since 2008. And in the last few years, it has become very challenging, not because of lack of regulation or because of regulation, it's just because of lack of clarity. That's how I'd define it, because a lot of people don't know where they stand, whether something is a security or not a security. That is a very big, that's one of the question. So it's just that there has been complete lack of clarity, and that's what is affecting. And I even see in a lot of projects, they say not for US customers, because that's their way of staying away from SEC. And that has, especially in this, the whole Web3, blockchain, crypto, all this world. And I see that a lot of new jurisdictions like Hong Kong, like Abu Dhabi, UAE, quite a few have come up and they are doing exceedingly well. And I do think that a lot of new innovation is going to come from these areas. One of these sort of innovations, you did mention that you're planning to bring out a lot of new products, including stable coins. Are there any other new innovation that M2 is planning to bring out that we should know about?
We have a bunch of things. Not all of them are innovation. As I said, the lending, the payment card is a product we launched. That's not entirely new, of course. There's some aspects on the trading side that are real innovations. Yes. That we are extremely excited about, but give us another 2 months to announce that. There's a lot of work that's going into it. I can't, unfortunately, I'm dying to talk about it. But
Definitely. We'll have to do this in person, actually, next time.
Yeah, exactly. I think you'll be here for Token 2049, which we're sponsoring as well. So very happy to have to, perhaps we can announce it there. That'd be great.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. Are there any learning resources or any, could be books, could be websites, could be any other type of a resource that you recommend? What are you consuming these days?
It's a good question. That goes back to the rabbit hole, right? There's not that one book, the crypto Bible you can read and know it all. It's really, it is going to a lot of different websites, listening to a lot of pod, following the blogs, of course, crypto Twitter, crypto X.
Yes.
Is a good resource. Going to conferences and meeting people, or the developer conferences, the less commercial conferences are usually the better ones to talk.
Absolutely.
I'm very
global conferences that happen all around the world. I've been to quite a few of them. But
yeah, we had the Satoshi Roundtable 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago in the UAE. That's another fantastic conference where a lot of builders and industry insiders come together and just discuss latest trends. And but that's not open to everybody. But look, there's not one place. It's jumping into the rabbit hole, soak up as much as you can, try it out, play with it. Don't just read it, play with it, see what it's like, what suits you. That's my advice.
exactly right. Another question for you around the same theme, and that is, when it comes to connecting with investors, whether they're institutional or retail, are there any particular conferences that you really prefer or that you recommend?
For people who want to invest in the platform, or for VC type investors?
Either. It could be VC type, or it could be invest in digital assets, whether they are RWAs, whether they are other staking assets. I don't know. Do they even exist, like digital asset conferences that specialize in that?
I think a lot of those more interesting conversations usually happen in the side events. You have all the big events, be it the Token 249, Barcelona, Paris, Denver. You have all of those. I think the more interesting conversation then don't necessarily happen on the main stage anymore. There's a lot that happens in side conferences or side events, and it's a matter of finding the right ones, picking the right ones, and trying to make your way into those.
Yeah, Token in Singapore, like the Token 2049 in Singapore, was insane. It had 440 side events. It's just, and I feel like crypto is the only industry where I see that there are so many events throughout the year. And at every major event, there's like hundreds of events. Even at ETH Denver, there's like probably 150, 180 events right now is going on. This time I didn't go. I didn't go last year. But yeah, it is very unique. Apart from all this, do you have any contrarian view, or what's your contrarian view when it comes to all things crypto, Web3, all these things, or on like a non-mainstream?
I don't think I'm very contrarian. Look, I'm bullish about the industry. I'm pro-regulation. That's contrary to some opinions, of course.
Yes, definitely, to a certain tribe.
My two cents on that one is, of course, the original intention and ethos of crypto is to get away from government, from intermediaries, and trust the code, not an institution. Yes. And protect privacy, of course. Regulation doesn't fit that original intention. That's very clear. At the same time, I think if you want mass adoption of crypto, you need certain rules that also protect investors, that protect the individual. And most people actually do prefer to having intermediaries that they can call when a problem happens. So you mentioned you're losing your passkey, right? And I was actually on stage yesterday in Dubai on a presentation where we discussed DEXs versus SEXs. Yes. And at the end of the day, mass adoption, if I talk to literally the grandparent or the father or the cousin or the aunt that I tried to tell them about crypto, it's a lot about trust and convenience and ease of use. And most people, it's just a matter of fact, they want somebody where they know there's a building, there's a phone number they can call or an 100%. Email they can write to. And complain and nag if something doesn't work.
Yes.
That's just, if you want mass adoption, it's a necessity. You can't do without it.
Yeah, 100%. I completely agree with that. It's just amazing. I was just booking tickets and I had such a complicated route, like going through first to Hong Kong, then to Dubai, then to Bangkok, then back to New Zealand. And I had some stuff up in the ticket. I could call Emirates. They immediately pick up the phone. It's amazing. Imagine if I was just imagining this, that if this whole experience was decentralized, yes, it would be slightly cheaper, but who do I call when I make a mistake or get stuck? It's nearly impossible to correct it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I completely understand. There is a place for centralization and a place for decentralization. Hopefully, we can create a world that is open for both, where there are the best parts of both the world, that it is permissionless, so more people are allowed to build. Because I feel like crypto moves so much faster, and I used to be a developer, and because it is permissionless, you don't have to wait for the software to provide an API. You could just go and build for a chain and it is transparent and you could access the on-chain data and all that. Yeah, so there are some really good qualities. That's what has kept me in this field. Yeah, so I think you've answered pretty much all my questions. But before we go, what's your ask? Is there anything you're looking for? Are you hiring? Are you raising funding? Anything, feel free to share.
So fundraising, thank God, we got very well equipped to start with. So you're not looking for money. We're constantly hiring. If you're talented in almost any area of crypto, we love to look at your CV. And of course, users, try us out. We're growing. Offer is out there. Love to have you on board. And that's where we are.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you. Thank you, Stefan, so much for your time and sharing all your wisdom and sharing your experience of building M2 as well as what's coming up with M2. Yeah, looking forward to meeting you in person in a couple of months.
Thanks a lot, Sam. Looking forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you so much for tuning in and listening or watching this episode of the Web3 with Sam Kamani podcast. By now, you know the drill. Leave a comment or share this episode with a friend and leave a review. I would love to hear from you. So that's why my DMs are open. Reach out to me, especially if you are a founder building a product in Web3. Then I would love to hear from you. What are your challenges? Is there anything that I can help you or my community can help you with? Thank you once again and wish you best of luck in building your startup or your project.